Barbara Kahn, the Executive Director of MSI. Our current marketplace gives us an abundance of choices on any product we're looking for, but then overwhelms us with information about them. So much so that my guest says that's why attention has now become a scarce resource for consumers. Tulin Erdem is a professor of business and professor of marketing and the chair of the marketing department at NYU's Stern School of Business. In her MSI Expert Curation, Consumer Inattention in Search and Choice, she says rational inattention might largely drive people's search and decision-making. Thank you, Tulin, for joining us.
Thank you very much, Barbara. I'm so happy to be here.
So before we get into the specifics of this research, why don't you tell us just in general the kinds of things that you've looked at, and then maybe you can position this type of research in that general research stream.
Sure. I have been working in the general area of choice modeling and consumer decision making for a very long time. I have different research streams, but one very important research stream has always been for me is how individuals, including consumers, make decisions and especially choices in the marketplace. And I utilize many different types of data over the past years, from transactional data like scanner panel data to survey data to studies like conjoint studies to kind of uncover consumer preferences, perceptions, learning about the attributes and products, and ultimately their choice behavior. I look at their customer journeys. So I come from that kind of perspective in terms of choice modeling. And then about 6-7 years ago, I started also focusing on the reality that consumers' attention is getting more scarce than ever. There are several reasons for that. One being now we have many more options in the marketplace. Two, now product categories are getting much more complex. For example, even in a category like smartphones, there are thousands of features that a consumer could look at. And our typical models were really not designed to look at those issues because, you know, you need about 7-8 attributes. If there are thousands of them, how will you model these things? Because most of these models assume consumers pay attention to all the information that's out there. And then given the complexity of the decision-making environments and the information overload out there, obviously consumers don't have either the time, the willingness, or the ability to collect all that information. So they need to make kind of a judgment in terms of what they attend to and what they don't attend to.
Let me stop you there and just try to summarize kind of quickly. A lot of your past work and a lot of decision-making work almost assumes that people are taking in this very complex decision-making process and weighing off or trading off the important weights of one attribute versus another and going forward and making more rational decisions. But in today's world, with complete information overload and, you know, everybody's got 6 screens open, that's not really the right as-if model for decision-making anymore. And now it's really a better model to try to predict what people are paying attention to and what they're not paying attention to.
Precisely.
I know you're going to tell us you used eye tracking work to find out literally what people are paying attention to and not. But when you went into this work, did you have a hypothesis as to what you thought would drive attention, or did you let the data like tell you what it was?
It is a little bit of both. I have 2 papers in this area, and actually in one of them, I had formal hypotheses. Myself and my co-authors had hypotheses. There's, of course, the literature utilizing eye tracking data. So I was building upon the literature and extending the literature. The basic tenets, like it is rational for the consumer to make these expected benefit, expected cost calculations, so to speak, and choose not to pay any attention to certain things. That's kind of to be expected. But kind of more precise, more nuanced hypotheses, some of them we did do that before even looking at the data, and certain other things we discovered after having looked at the data.
So tell us the things you discovered. That sounds like particularly interesting.
One thing that was very interesting is with the models I and my co-authors built, my co-authors, especially in that paper, being Rick Peters and Anna Martinovici, what we found is that you can actually predict choices quite early in the process. There was some literature that said, you know, towards the end of the task, you can already guess, predict what the consumer will do. But with the models we built, we were able to predict choices pretty early in the process. For example, if the task is X minutes, or if consumers take X time to decide whether it's 15 or 20 minutes to go through some information, and if you divide that into four quarters, we were already predicting quite well in the second quarter what they will do. Wow. That's very revealing, because it already tells you how consumers come with certain preferences already into a decision environment. And what they attend to is a function of their preferences. But then at the same time, there is a reverse causality or feedback loop of what captures their attention, then drives their preferences. And the moment you are really precisely measuring their attention through eye tracking, which is the best way of really measuring attention, you can predict what they will do very quickly.
So are you saying their preferences form what they pay attention to, and that's going to drive what you see they ultimately choose? But it's also true what gets their attention seems to also form their preferences going forward.
Exactly. So there is this feedback loop, this loop relationship between attention and preferences, and both of them together affect decisions. Another thing we found, we already expected that prior experience, prior brand ownership would affect what consumers do. But interestingly, what we found is that once you account for attention, what people attend to, there are no further, so to speak, additional residual effects of what they did in the past. So people indeed, consumers indeed, pay attention more to the brands they own. But once you capture that effect, there are no other remaining effects of past brand ownership. That was one of the interesting findings in that paper.
So that's interesting. So attention really drives things. Now, what drives the attention could come from these preferences, and you're already establishing that. But attention alone will predict ultimate choice. Is it also true that if you're an unfamiliar brand, and instead of trying to make the argument, you should choose me because I have better utility, that might be a better strategy to get consumers to pay attention to that unfamiliar brand?
Exactly. That's why in the MSI paper, which utilizes similar data, but it focuses on a slightly different issue, that paper looks like, how do people indeed choose what to attend to? So we have consumers' eye fixations, and we are modeling it as a search model. I can decide to look at, let's say, if I'm looking at smartphones, one consumer may focus more on Apple, the other one may focus more on Samsung, but also people may focus on a certain attribute more, for example, price or screen size. So that model looks at how consumers' prior information, before they even start deciding or collecting information, how that affects, along with other things, that search process, that consumer decision of what to attend to and what not to attend to. And once you model this and kind of correctly explain consumer heterogeneity in how they behave, because different consumers behave differently. Some consumers may just stick to their own brand. Some others may be more variety seeking, so to speak, in their information search and maybe looking at other brands. Some consumers may focus on one attribute, other consumers may focus on multiple attributes. Once you look at this whole heterogeneity of the process, you can see really what matters to different consumers. And then once you estimate the model, you can have kind of these evaluations, simulations to see how you can affect consumer behavior. For example, if you are a brand and you are seeing that people really don't pay much attention to you, what you should be doing. Maybe we find that a certain attribute attracts most attention from most consumers. Maybe you have to focus on that attribute. Or if you know that you are better on a certain attribute, there are certain things you can do on the website. So for example, in that paper, we discuss recommendation systems and the implications of this attention for marketers and managers, how to design their web flow as well as what to do in comparison websites to draw more attention to what they want the consumers to pay attention to.
So what you're describing, I could also think of in the old behavioral change literature and persuasion. But when people talked about that literature, they were talking about increasing importance weight. So in other words, if you were good on a particular attribute, increase the weight of the importance of that attribute so that you would win. You're suggesting somewhat of a parallel process, but not based on importance weights, but based more on attention, which is somewhat provocative because the other way is very much irrational decision making. And here you're almost talking about salience or driving attention and not necessarily attributes that would literally change persuasion mechanisms.
Exactly. It's a bit of both. For example, again, in the MSI paper, it is a learning model. We are looking also at how people learn. But to learn, that's what the old literature kind of couldn't do because there were no data. To even learn, you need to have to pay attention to. And part of the attention, as I said, is, of course, preferences. But some of the attention also happens for other reasons.
Right.
So it has, even learning needs to start with attention.
So I was making it too simple, and you're going to scale me back a little. Yes, some of that old stuff is still relevant, but we didn't put enough weight on attention. Let me switch. So that's a very interesting finding, I think. I think people will find that useful going forward. Let me switch gears a little bit and ask you to comment on how important you think eye tracking is as a mechanism and how much weight should marketers put on using eye tracking as
a I think it's a great data source. All different data sources, of course, are complementary. They are not substitutes. But eye tracking, especially in terms of understanding consumer choice processes and, of course, attention, is a great resource. Both in marketing, consumer decision-making, consumer behavior, but also in behavioral economics. Lots of people called for use of eye tracking data, actually, to test some of the theories developed in behavioral rational attention theory, because indeed in this kind of environment, it's quite rational. It's boundedly rational for consumers not to pay attention to everything. So, and what better way to understand what people attend to? What types of things grab consumers' attention more, keeping even preferences constant? We just said that, of course, people will look at more things that have preferences, higher preferences for. But even keeping that constant, what grabs attention in this hyper-complex decision-making environments? And eye tracking, if not necessary, usually it is even necessary data source, but it is a great, very rich data source to uncover all those processes and test what is best to increase the salience and attention.
So is most of your eye tracking so far been like things that are online or on a computer or something like that? Because now Amazon's operating these Just Walk Out stores where there's cameras and sensors in the store. And presumably you can use that kind of behavior, similar and goggles and things like that in the store to try to get attention, not just online, but also in stores and in physical environments. Have you started to look at that? Or if not, can you comment on whether that's feasible?
Sure. I personally haven't started working on that sort of data, but I know colleagues working on it. Actually, one of my colleagues, Brian Bollinger, as well as Raluca Ursu at NYU Stern, have been using such data to look at similar issues, like even age-old questions of how you decide about shelf space and how do retailers arrange or make decisions about what to put where. And these kind of technologies that are being developed now in a very unobtrusive way will be very helpful, I think, for various different types of managers, from retail business to manufacturers, to understand and uncover consumer attention, not only attention, but also kind of what decision rules people use. Again, in the typical modeling, it's very difficult for us to see or measure what is the exact decision mechanism consumers are employing. Like, are they using a lexicographic rule of, I will only look at price first, eliminate certain things, and then just compare the rest? Okay, we kind of try to infer, but we don't have a direct mechanism of seeing that. With attention data like eye tracking, you exactly know where they are looking at, whether they are looking at attribute, they are never looking at price, for example, first, or just the opposite. They only look at prices and then they start comparing different brands on different attributes. So what we say, the heuristics, like the shortcuts, the decision rules they use, it is a great data source to uncover that. And why is it important to uncover heuristics? Is it just academic interest? No, because if you know what the consumer heuristics are, what the decision rules are that they are using, first, you can increase their welfare by making the environment easier for them. Two, it also gives you the mechanism to interfere and then to give the right messages at the right time of that decision process.
I think that this stuff is more important than ever, as we said in the introduction, because now you're being bombarded by things all over the place. And as we're moving to multiple screens in our life, getting the consumer's attention is probably one of the most important things a marketer can do. Thank you very much for joining us today. Tulin Erdem is a professor of business and a professor of marketing and the chair of the marketing department at NYU's Stern School of Business. She's written an MSI expert curation on consumer inattention in search and choice, which you can find on MSI's site. And we're also going to have another event talking more about these eye tracking mechanisms. She'll present her research in more detail, and some of her colleagues will present other uses and applications, eye tracking research, in that session. So thank you very much for joining us. I'm Barbara Kahn, the Executive Director of MSI.